Good morning, bonjour. Alors, on va tout de suite commencer. Je vous demanderai de prendre vos écouteurs, puisqu'on a au téléphone le docteur Ibrahim Assose Fall, Assistant Director General for Emergency Response of WHO. Dr. Fall, can you hear me?
Hello, this is Dr. Fall. Yes, I can hear you.
Thank you very much, sir, to be with us. Dr. Fall is going to give you a short briefing on the situation of Ebola in DRC. And then we will open the floor to questions. Dr. Fall, you have the floor.
So, yes, thank you, Sose. As we said, I will let you know when you're about to speak. So, please, everybody's listening in and we'll be able to ask questions afterwards. Floor is yours.
Good morning, colleagues from Butembo in North Kivu. Thank you for joining us for this short briefing. I will start by highlighting where we are in terms of numbers. I think it's important for any outbreak. As of yesterday, we have recorded a total of 1,089 cases, including 1,023 confirmed and 66 probable. And so far, we have recorded 679 deaths. At the same time, we have 331 survivors who are, you know, going through a specific program to accompany them. And in terms of geographic location, in total, we have had so far 21 health zones reporting Ebola cases. But when you look at the last 21 days, we have recorded cases in 13 health zones. This shows a kind of, you know, geographic limitation of the expansion of the outbreak, because out of 21 health zones affected, we have now 13 reporting cases. And I think we still have the hotspot in Butembo and Katwa. And I'm sure everybody is aware of the upsurge we have seen last week with 72 cases compared to 56 cases the week before. Unfortunately, this is something we expected, because if you look at what happened 2 or 3 weeks ago, meaning during the incubation period, we have had some major disruption in the response related to security issues, violence, and so on. And meaning that people who are at risk, like high-risk contact, were not able to be protected by rapid vaccination, were not able to protect people from infected bodies, and this has major impact any time we have disruption in our prevention measures. That's why the peak of last week was expected from the responders. But at the same time, we have taken important actions vis-à-vis the community with our community dialogue, because if you look at the virus hotspot we have had, anytime you move from one location to another, we are dealing with, you know, different communities, different problems. And when you have a new health zone, for example, it's 100,000 people, where you have 3 or 4 Ebola cases, it's challenging at the beginning to let them understand that Ebola is a problem, because they have so many other problems, like insecurity, being killed for many years, access to water, education, and so on. So it takes time to convince them that Ebola is a real problem for them. And that's why we have started this community dialogue, to listen to them, to understand the problem, and working with development partners like World Bank and UNICEF to address the other problems they have been having for many, many years. So we have seen some positive impact on the community dialogue. For example, in Katwa, where the Ebola Treatment Center was born, the same population came to reconstruct the treatment center. And of course, employment is one important problem. That's why you are employing more local people. And when you say local people here, it's not people from, you know, the country, people from the local community. And this is an important aspect of our approach right now. And during the weekend, we have trained 40 people from Katwa who are now part of the barrier team, and who will be also doing disinfection. These are important aspects for the local population. So we are adapting our tactics based on area where we have issues with the communities, and now we have rapid response team in some of the most challenging places like Masereka, Lubero, and we are doing the same in Wiavi. So we are making progress, but at the same time taking into account the specific challenges we are facing or may face in different villages or health communities. This is the way we are working, and what worked in Mangina is not the same in Beni or in Butembo. We have controlled the outbreak in many places, but we still have the hotspot of Beni and Butembo. We have 700 people still deployed in DR Congo. We continue our main intervention, but adapting to the local reality. And when we raise the issue of security and mistrust, at the same time we see some positive progress like vaccination, where more than 90% of the eligible people have been vaccinated, and more than 80% set on dignified barrier done at community level. So this is where we are right now, and we continue to be committed to work closely with government partners, community, to end the outbreak.
Thank you very
much. Over to you for questions, comments.
Thank you very much, Dr. Fall. I'll open the floor to question now. I'm looking at the reporter in the room, Catherine.
Yes, Catherine Fiancombo-Conga for France 24. Good morning, sir. You spoke about security issues and people that have not been able to be protected. Could you please elaborate a little bit more about that?
Okay, France 24, do you want me to speak in French or English?
I think for my colleagues, English, but vous pouvez parler français aussi.
Okay.
Allez-y, monsieur.
Quand on parle de la situation sécuritaire, nous avons eu deux aspects. Il y a des attaques par des groupes armés, donc par exemple ce qui s'est passé pour les centres de traitement, mais aussi des attaques au niveau de certaines communautés. Et donc, en termes de protection, pour les centres de traitement, nous avons donc organisé une protection rapprochée sans pour autant militariser la réponse, mais mettre des forces de sécurité pour protéger donc les alentours. Je pense que c'est important pour rassurer aussi bien les patients que ceux qui travaillent dans ces centres. Maintenant, pour ce qui est des communautés, nous ne faisons pas des interventions militarisées. Nous privilégions donc le dialogue avec les communautés pour avoir leur adhésion donc aux mesures que nous préconisons au niveau de ces communautés. C'est ça l'approche que nous utilisons. Merci.
Tu as un follow-up?
Oui, merci. Vas-y. Juste un suivi. Quand vous parlez de protection rapprochée, est-ce que vous pouvez être plus précis? Qui est-ce qui protège qui? Est-ce que vous faites appel à des entités des Nations Unies ou d'autres entités? Par exemple, vous travaillez avec des autorités locales congolaises.
Donc, nous travaillons directement avec les Nations Unies. Les Nations Unies disposent d'une équipe de sécurité. Par exemple, il y a des axes routiers sur lesquels on ne peut pas passer sans escorte, et cela est fait par les Nations Unies. Maintenant, pour ce qui est de la protection des centres de traitement, les Nations Unies travaillent avec la police locale pour assurer une protection de la zone. Je pense que c'est important à préciser.
Merci.
Excusez-moi, la zone, c'est Butembo, c'est Katwa?
Je parle de la zone aux alentours des centres de traitement.
Merci, monsieur. D'autres questions, Lisa?
Yes, good morning. Lisa Schlein, Voice of America. The International Red Cross Federation has had its volunteers who are local in the communities that are affected working in these communities for some time. Now, I'm not sure I heard correctly. Did you say you have 40 people who are working in these communities now? Are they also Red Cross volunteers, or are they different? And how does your work in trying to create trust in the community, having the dialogue with the community, differ from the work that has been going on for some time? I mean, I've been following this story for quite a while, and it seems as if it's been pretty active, and sometimes they sound optimistic and sometimes not.
Dr. Fall?
Thank you. We have hundreds of Red Cross volunteers working with us in the response, in fact, very closely with the local community health workers, UNICEF employees, and so on. But at the same time, if you go down to the community, they have very specific asks. For example, in Katwan, they wanted people from the local area to be part of the response. That's why they selected 40 people from the local community to be trained and to be part of the team responding. It doesn't mean they are the only one responding. They are joining a bigger team of community health workers. I think this is extremely important. So coming to the community engagement in general, I was saying every single, you know, health area, health zone is different. So if you look at, you know, Beni, it took 2 to 3 months to really penetrate the community and to be able to control the outbreak. Here in Butembo and Katwa is even more challenging because of the history of conflict, of mistrust. So we continue to organize now what we call the community dialogue, because the approach used in Beni had limitation in Butembo and Katwa. And through the community dialogue, we listen to local population to understand their problems, including outside Ebola, and how the international community can help them to address their basic problem. In addition to that, we discuss and agree with them on how we expect them to be part of the response and what are the expectations. And we find what we call a trust agreement between the Ebola response and the community. And through the trust agreement, we are able to monitor implementation of keeping action at community level. So we always have to adjust what we are doing with community, depending on where is the hotspot. Over.
Just to follow up.
Yes.
Do you think you're making an impact? And are the number of... You said before that people are very concerned about issues like security and so forth, so they don't really take Ebola seriously enough, or they don't really know that Ebola is something that is life-threatening. Is this changing in any way?
So security in general is a much more complex issue because we don't, you know, control the armed groups. It will take years and years to have real security in this area. But at the same time, so listening to them and understanding what are the issues and proposing what we can do in terms of, you know, fulfilling some of their basic needs like water, like, you know, rebuilding the schools. We are doing that with UNICEF, World Bank. But security in general is a much more complex issue in this area.
Merci. Isabelle.
Good morning. Bonjour, Isabelle Sakoff pour l'agence de presse espagnole EFE. Est-ce que je comprends ici qu'il y a un problème important de méfiance? Il y a une étude qui vient d'être publiée qui dit qu'au moins un quart de personnes dont les sont affectés ne croient pas à l'existence du virus d'Ebola. Donc, comment est-ce que l'OMS se prend pour résoudre cette situation qui paraît très grave? Parce que si déjà on ne comprend pas qu'il y a une maladie qui est en train d'infecter les personnes, comment est-ce qu'on peut lutter contre elle?
Docteur Fall.
Merci beaucoup. Je pense que c'est une question importante. Effectivement, cette étude a été réalisée en 2018. Et avait montré que beaucoup de personnes donc, qui ne croyaient pas à la maladie. Je pense qu'il faut comprendre que c'est la première fois que l'épidémie d'Ebola arrive dans cette région. Donc vous voyez que les symptômes de la maladie à virus Ebola sont similaires à beaucoup d'autres maladies qui sévissent ici, telles que le paludisme et autres, et la fièvre typhoïde et autres. Donc ça a pris du temps pour arriver à convaincre cette communauté de l'existence de cette maladie mortelle. Je donnais l'exemple de Beni où il nous a fallu près de 2 à 3 mois pour arriver à convaincre et pénétrer la communauté. Donc il y a un travail quotidien qui se fait et maintenant au niveau le plus périphérique possible et local avec donc aussi bien la Croix-Rouge, donc l'UNICEF, y compris l'utilisation de vidéos et de films donc pour convaincre la communauté. Pour donner un exemple ici à Katwa la semaine passée, Donc, même les chefs les plus résistants donc, ont accepté d'être vaccinés pour donner l'exemple à la population qu'il faut se protéger contre Ebola. Donc c'est un travail donc, qui se fait de longue haleine et en fonction des localités, des communautés, nous devons tout le temps nous adapter.
Merci beaucoup, M. Fall. Tu as un follow-up, Isabelle?
Juste, est-ce que, donc, vous direz que ce problème, il est plutôt surmonté, cette méfiance, parce que vous dites que l'étude, il date de l'année passée, donc maintenant, vous croyez que c'est un problème plutôt que résolu?
Non. Je ne peux pas dire que c'est totalement résolu. Si on prend un exemple, ça dépend des localités. Vous prenez une localité comme Béni, c'est un problème qui est résolu. Une localité comme Mangina, c'est un problème qui est résolu. Komanda, Oicha, etc. Mais ici, à Butembo, dans certaines zones spécifiques, telles que Masereka, telles que Lubero, Vuovi, nous avons toujours ce genre de problème. Et donc, nous mettons toute l'énergie autour du dialogue communautaire pour lever ce genre de misconception et arriver à engager totalement la communauté. Merci.
Merci à vous. Stéphanie, was that a hand? No. OK. So then, alors, Monsieur Fall, je vous remercie beaucoup, Dr. Fall, pour votre intervention ce matin. Je vais continuer le briefing ici à New York avec nos collègues, Christian, mais aussi Christophe et Hervé. On va parler du cyclone. Merci beaucoup et bonne continuation, Dr. Fall.
Christian, who works for WHO.
Yes, Christian is going to be with me the whole briefing. He has lots of things to tell you, but is it on Ebola?
Yes.
Okay, just ask a question then.
Yes. Sorry, I was a little late. Did you give the latest figures on Ebola cases and deaths? And
I don't know if Sose, if you're still online, in case you're listening, but I'm just giving out the numbers as we had them. So as of 31 March, we have a total of 1,089 cases, including 679 deaths, 331 survivors and patients still under care.
Merci. Christian. Okay, let's go into the next subject, the cyclone.